You know, what's the top 10 fields that I should go in? What's the top 10 kind of businesses I can start? Of the revenue, right? Much like in a startup.
Yes, man. And let's get some of our old soldiers back out.
Musicians to be professional. They know how to talk.
To help them wake up happy. It's not about a rectangle and a price.
All right, y'all, we're tuning in for another episode of Bank That Radio Show. I am your host, Andreas, and I have another interview being brought via Zoom, courtesy of PodMatch. So if you're a podcaster out there and you would like to get higher caliber guests and be able to, you know, reach just a whole new level of guests, hit me up and I'll send you that link. But we have Daryl Stevens, who is the co-founder of the Bass Parlor app and has a background both in music and business. Mm-hmm. I love this because the same type of background, not technical with the music, but, you know, music experience. Daryl has worked for several years as a sound engineer for video game company EA Sports. It's in the game. See, I know I had it.
You on it, man. You on it.
Where he helped the dialogue, sound effects, and the music clips for Madden, NFL, and NCAA football games. He went on to go to Howard University. That's the, okay, Howard. Harvard is the HBCU. Okay.
Yeah, Howard. Howard's HBCU.
Oh, Howard, Howard is, okay, Howard.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I had that
up
right.
In DC. Yeah, you're right. Howard up in DC, yep.
Yeah, got an MBA. Was your MBA concentrated in anything, or was it just generalized master business administration?
Yeah, focused on, you have a concentration, but focused on supply chain management with a minor in or a sub concentration on finance.
That's what's up. Let's see here. Bass Parlor is a music app that empowers musicians with an easy way to find and connect with other musicians worldwide, which I think it is great that we have these types of services out there. So, Daryl, thank you for, you know, coming on and, you know, and just bringing your story, because that in itself, I'm like to, like we were saying, like, you know, music, first of all, getting in music in any type of fashion and form is, like you said, a lifelong commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think people understand the different routes you can take in music, because I had this conversation with a previous guest about all the different revenue streams you can do or job fields. But you decided to go ahead and just go even further.
Develop an app
that is putting, you know, say, musicians and artists and creatives together. So what was the inspiration behind doing that?
Man, let me go way back. So I was really big, like in my early 20s, all through my 20s, I was really big into music production. Mm-hmm. So I got, you know, I had started off with hardware, had an MPC, had a Motif keyboard. Just started making beats. So I grew up playing sports. And once, you know, that didn't pan out, once I didn't make the league, I had to have something else to actually, to take the place of that, give me that same passion and, you know, mm-hmm. things I can pursue. And I was passionate about. So music, I was always a music person. I was always a fan of, like, you know, songs, artists and music, but I was never a, like, producer. I didn't grow up playing the instrument. So that kind of took the place, the music production took the place when I stopped playing sports. I just dive right into it full force. Mm-hmm. And so really got into the music production, was, you know, producing for a lot of little small little local artists. I was living in Orlando at the time, mm-hmm. working EA Sports, and then, you know, on the side, you know, doing production, music production, some audio engineering on the side. And I wasn't great at it. I loved it, but I wasn't great at it. My beats, you know what I'm saying? They weren't hitting like in my head like they should be hitting.
Uh-huh.
It exposed me to, like, as a producer, at least, you can be very siloed out. You know, if you be in a room making beats, and it can get not boring because you love the music, but mm-hmm. you can be separated from the artist a lot of times, separate from that collaboration mm-hmm. and that integration with other people. So I just kept that in my head. You know, I stopped producing music. I stayed a music lover. I stopped producing it as much. Ended up going to school at Howard up in D.C., and then mm-hmm. I started seeing these WeWorks start popping up all over the place, like a little shared workspace. I was like, that's a great idea, but something like that for producers is a better idea, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I didn't see anything out there like that. So I decided to start my own WeWork. I called it Bass Parlor. So at the time, it was Bass Parlor Studios. So I decided to start my own studio, where it's just for producers and artists. So you know, you're working around, you're producing, you're working on music, songwriting, and like your little station, but you're surrounded by other artists and other musicians at their station. So you're right there to collaborate with people if you want to. We had a studio in the back, so you can record songs right there on the spot. And we loved it, man. So you know, I kind of found another way to make an impact in music, in the music industry. Started building a lot of momentum. That, you know, that was in Atlanta. So I actually moved from D.C. to go back to Atlanta to start the studio. And, you know, we were really building a lot of momentum in the indie market, in the music market in Atlanta. And then COVID hit. And COVID hit. So we had to shut the studio down. But before we shut the studio down, probably a few months, maybe even a year before, I started having my head, you know, a lot of stuff we're doing in the studio was connecting musicians from all around the city. We had people coming up from, you know, Macon, Valdosta, Florida, could come to some of our events, people, you know, Alabama. So all around the Southeast, really, people coming down. And I was like, if we have an app that can connect people, that some of the same stuff we're doing in person at the studio, but with an app, I can connect people from all around the world. So I started like the beginning design phases of what that app would look like while we were still in the studio. COVID hit. You know, I had to shut down the studio, so I went full force into developing that app. So that's the order story. So we launched that app in 2021, and we just hit the ground running. And you know, our mission is doing a lot of the same things we had at the physical location, which was you know, just connecting musicians, give them a place where they could find other musicians, artists, producers, instrumentalists, songwriters, no matter where they are, connect with them. And now we're releasing a brand new feature actually in a week or so where. Not only connect, you can go live, you can learn from them, you can get mentorship from different artists and producers, you can mentor them, and eventually to be able to record directly through the bass part of the rap. So we're yeah, so we're doing a lot in the music community. So we want to be like the headquarters for all indie musicians.
That's what's up. How many downloads have y'all been able to get thus far?
So we're up to, as far as just downloads, over 10,000 downloads.
Okay.
What we do is we more make sure that not just the downloads are important, but the active users.
Yeah.
So around 2,000 active users on the app right now from all around the world, focused mostly in the US. I'll say about 75+ to 80% are based in the US, but we're starting to see a lot more musicians from other countries and continents, Europe, you know, Africa, some in Asia, and we have a few from Australia too. So, you know, we're starting to spread around globally, which is a great thing.
That's what's up. Well, congratulations on that, because I know extremely how hard it is to get people to download an app. I actually, I have an app for the Banked Out Radio show, and I launched it 2 years ago, and I had the native version first for the computer, so it wouldn't take up much of your space. And I think the first day I did like 1,200. I went on to, well, you know, I've been doing this podcast for a good little minute, so I have a, like a fan base built up. So then when I launched it on Apple and Google, I think I ended up doing around 1,500 native downloads.
Okay.
And getting people to, you know, use the app, interact with it, because it was the music, it was business and music put together. So, of course, you know what I'm saying, programming on the digital music side. Like, I got a calling card and everything. It's WBRO, Banked Out, you know what I'm saying, all that stuff.
Right, right.
Working with directories, all that stuff. And I'm like, I learned so much that goes into just having a digital radio station. I'm like, I ain't got time for all that stuff. I still got the podcast that I'm doing and trying to keep up with it. So, you know, one-man show trying to do all this stuff is just – it's a lot of time and it's a lot of research, a lot of coding that goes into that. One of the features on my particular app is a it was a loyalty program that we had on there. And that particular feature alone was 300 lines of code because you could go in and scan with your QR code, a code for that particular business, or they could punch in a PIN number and it would track everyone who had used it in that area. So when you got to like 5 or 7 or whatever the marker was, you would get your free item, discounted item, whatever the case may be, and then it resets all over. So it was very interactive and all that stuff. I'm still, my web developer is working on new features and all that stuff. So I'm like, it's still on the Google store. I think we took it off of the Apple store, but it's a lot. So the fact that you're able to do that, hats off to you.
I appreciate it, man.
That is hard.
Yeah, it's a long journey, but it's one step at a time, you know?
Exactly. So you're connecting all these different musicians and artists. Are they understanding? Because I know how it is working with artists. You know, they're creative,
right?
They're not so business savvy or logical thinkers. So are they understanding, like, you know what I'm saying, the basis of the app and how it's beneficial to them within their careers and industry?
Yeah, they definitely are. They definitely are. Then I also make it easy to contact me, you know, through like either social media, you know, they have an email address, or through the app, you can go through support through the app. So I make sure I stay in contact with all of them. And on top of that, you know, I have a YouTube mashup, a YouTube series called the Bass Parlor Mashup, where we connect.
It's the home for collaboration with the artists and producers. We putting y'all in the studio to make the good music. Catch a vibe, take the people on the ride. Tell your story full of pride, lay it down. I can't wait to see it rise up at Bass Parlor. We in the lab with professionals.
Where we connect musicians and basically give them an hour to create a brand new song from scratch. And so, you know, I'm always talking to those musicians just to get feedback. And so I could kind of foresee some of the problems they have before they even have it, or some problems they might have down the line. So yeah, they see, I mean, no matter how business savvy you are or tech savvy you are, you see how connection can help your career. You see how it can help your music, you know, on a basic level. People understand that part of it.
Yeah. Okay. So the fact that you have this and you're dealing in that industry, right? So now you're exposed to the business side of stuff, right?
Right.
So how is it navigating that? And like, I know one of your questions, I know that you're ready to answer, is like, especially within the artists, is it, you know, beneficial for them to stay indie, or should they look for, you know, funding opportunities being signed and all that?
Yes, it's a complicated question because it depends on the specific case. It's actually very similar to a business, to a startup, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would say if you're an independent artist and you have enough money to front yourself, to give yourself enough money to like for your own marketing, you know, so different people have different financial situations, right? The benefit of a major label is one, the connections they have with radio stations, with other musicians, with, you know, right, with recording studios. So they have all these different connections. Two is they can front you money, so you can add the marketing, you can record, you can. There's a lot of things you can do with just having that money. So they front you a lot of money. But on the downside of that, you know, they're taking a big piece of the revenue that you make, right? And much like in a startup game, if with a venture capitalist, if they come in, they're going to give you a lot of money so I can do things I wouldn't be able to otherwise do. But at the same time, they're taking a piece of my equity. Same kind of thing. So the equity as the artist, or as a musician, basically your royal. I mean, your ownership, your catalog, your ownership of music, and so you want to keep that in mind. So if you feel like, you know, you can't make those connections, you can't really have, you don't have the money to get as far as you want to go, or at least get to the next step of where you want to go on the front end, you might want to consider it, but also have someone look over the contract, because you don't want to be locked into something that can hinder your career in the future and only looking at the short term. So you're like, okay, well, they offer me, let's put a number on this, $1 million, let's say. Offer me $1 million, but that $1 million that they can give you up front, it might not be good 10 years from now where you don't own any of your music catalog. And you know, you've only been able to put 2 albums out because they decide what music you have comes out. You know, so there's positives and negatives to both. There's not an easy answer. I would say this, it's easier now than any other time in history to be successful as an independent artist. Yeah. So I think that's a very viable path now, where before it was always viable, but now it's you can be very successful as an independent artist. And there's a lot of different cases of people doing that. And so you want to really take consideration that, because you can go direct to your consumer. You can go direct to your fans, and you can build a large fan base, go on shows, sell your music directly to them without the need of a record label, you know, but there are still huge benefits to record labels, you know?
Yeah. And the conversations I have with independent artists, and I've been having them for years, is that, you know, like you said, it is a complicated, you know what I'm saying, question to answer. And there's no one shoe fits all or whatever, or no cookie cutter approach. The thing that I bump into is that if they're gung-ho about being an independent artist, then treat your craft like the business that it is, as opposed to thinking that, you know, people owe you something just because you're talented in a particular area.
Right. Right.
I run into that a lot. And then they get mad when you're not getting the results that you want. Like you said, if you want to go the independent route, you want to keep all your lion's share of stuff, that means you're responsible for everything and every aspect of that business. So you're responsible for the product and development of it. You're responsible for the packaging and marketing of it. Mm-hmm. You're responsible for the, you know, the admin work that goes along with it. So you're responsible for keeping all those cogs in the wheel of a business moving, driving down that lane. Mm-hmm. Do you think from the musicians and the artists that you come across, do you think they're still like in the mindset of they just want to be creatives? So create and then everything else doesn't matter? Or have you seen an uptick where, you know, they've been showing that they have the ability to, you know, go out there and start something from scratch? Because ultimately, you're an artist, you're a business.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm seeing more and more independent artists that are getting more business savvy, specifically with marketing. Mm-hmm. They really, really get more marketing savvy, more of more introspective and more understanding of how to reach out, how to find their audience, mm-hmm. And how to keep that connection with their audience. There are still a lot of artists that I come in contact with who don't have that business savvy. And I always say that's okay. You just have to outsource that part, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Have somebody else handle the marketing, have somebody else handle the finance. You want to have somebody else at least look at the finance anyway. You know, mm-hmm. you don't want the only person to handle your financial situation. Once you get to that point, you don't have to have that starting out. But once you get mm-hmm. to that point where you're making money. But I think either way, you can be successful either way. If you have business savvy, because there are a lot of artists, and I would say even a majority of them, I just want to make music. So I'm going to go in there and interact with my fans, mm-hmm. and that's okay. You just have to have somebody else to supplement areas that you're weak at, or areas that you don't want to do. You know, it doesn't mean that's the end of your career. Or you're not going to make it. Just have a team around you to mm-hmm. you know, to boost those areas. But I am seeing more and more artists who do have a great understanding of other areas of music outside of just the creation part of it. You know?
Yeah. I also think the terms like, you know, making it, what is making it? To me, making it is you get to live your dream, right? You get to wake up every day and you get to do what you want to do. And that provides you joy and happiness. It's not a certain financial amount of money. Mm-hmm. It's having the freedom and luxury of your time. That's what making it to me, because I see a lot of people, you know, they are touring. They're, you know, making a living, providing income for their household, whether it be like 60, 70, 80, 100, whatever the case may be, $1,000 a year.
Right.
So that to me is like making it. And I think sometimes the glitz and glamour of how they sell the industry, platinum zillion artists, double platinum, triple platinum, whatever the case may be, millions upon millions in the bank and all that stuff, huge houses. And that's like the top 0.1% or whatever that gets to experience that. That's not every day, considering that, you know, there are millions upon millions of musicians and artists and people who are in the music industry. How has AI, or how do you think AI is, you know, playing a role in shaping the music industry?
I think it starting to settle down, and like it's going to see. So the bulk of the AI capability hasn't really hit the music industry yet, but mm-hmm. you know, you can reject how it is going to affect the industry. You mm-hmm. know, right now you just see small like incidents, small blips about, you know, like for instance that Drake song that came out that was AI created, Drake and Weeknd songs AI created. So you can see it's the beginning stages of it really hitting the industry hard. What mm-hmm. I think is going to happen, what I think could happen is that, you know, with AI being able to mimic voices, be able to mimic the sound and the flow, the cadence of the timbre of a voice. Mm-hmm. I think that one thing that could happen, it could be if they play it right, it could be very, very beneficial to artists, because mm-hmm. I think one possibility is an artist, let's say The Weeknd, let's stay on The Weeknd. Mm-hmm. The Weeknd, if people create a song in the voice of The Weeknd, he gets a cut of anything that's created with his voice. So you can license your voice if you can, and get a cut of any song that's created with that. So if you have a songwriter that writes a song, I want to use the Weeknd's voice for this song. You know, the AI song did, you know, you have to almost like a pick, like if you use someone's photograph or use someone's, you know, music or something like that, you have to, you won't be able to just put it out there without that person's permission and them getting a cut of whatever sales come from that. So as an artist, I make music off my own, you know, music that they have coming out, but also I can make money off, or at least a slice of money off people who use my likeness, my voice, you know, which I own my voice, and put out music in my voice. So I think it could be beneficial. It could be another revenue stream for artists. But they will have to get that whole part structured. You know, that's going to be a whole situation of itself to get that whole part structured, because then you can talk about, okay, how much of your voice do you own? Maybe I'm not mimicking 100% of it, but I can tone it back to 75% of it, you know? So like what you have a lot of different variables you have to account for when it comes to that. But I think AI is going to affect every single industry, not just recording industry, but that's one way I see a positive way it could affect the recording industry by creating other revenue streams for artists and maybe producers as well. That's a huge one, man. But we'll see how it settles down, and how, you know, when it does settles, what happens. But it's scary on the other end too. It's scary because AI is getting to a point where it could, you know, create art. To a point where you don't have to have a songwriter to write a song in someone else's voice. It can just create the song itself. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's something that the actors were fighting over when they had their last strike. The actors and writers. Where you can create its own art. It doesn't have to have somebody creating the lyrics or creating the whatever it is, the scene in the case of movies, and create itself and then use someone else's likeness by creating its own lyrics in the case of music. So that's scary too, man. Mm-hmm. You know, the original thought that was that AI would still have boundaries. But now we're seeing, as we get further and further down this AI pathway, we're seeing that it doesn't necessarily have to have these creative limits.
So I did see where someone said that with AI, they wasn't, I think it was a screenwriter. And I believe he said something to the, and I'm paraphrasing here, that AI wouldn't be able to have like the real raw human emotion that, you know, us humans experience. Like, how can you really, like, you know, program an AI, because it's more, you know, based in, I guess, logic and data and things of that nature. But part of us being human is having, like, you know, emotional experiences regardless of the logic that it you know, it presents, like, you know. I was gonna say, like, prime example, and I know this is like might be a little extreme, whatever, but if you have a loved one you know, in a burning house, right, and it's about to collapse, you're on the outside, they're on the inside. Human reaction is to run in there, get your loved one or whatever, knowing that the probability of the house and y'all about to be trapped in it and like burn up or whatever is extremely high. So right. If you're sitting there thinking like Spock or whatever, there's only 97%, you know what I'm saying, or a 3% success rate, 97%, you know what I'm saying, failure rate. The logical thing to do is to let the person just, you know, burn up in the house.
Right.
That's your level. Yeah. That's your connection. That's your, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
You
right.
want to take that 3% chance.
Yeah, I got you. But the thing is, and I agree with that, but the question, and AI maybe would never get to the point where it can feel emotions. Mm-hmm. It might not be like sitting it to that point. It might not have, you know, have consciousness where they can have those own emotions, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it can express emotions that affect humans. You know what I'm saying? That affect people. Like, I don't have to feel emotions to express emotions, you know? Even people can do that. Like, I don't have to have been in love to write a love song that affects people, you know? So it's like, as AI, they don't necessarily, I don't think they necessarily have to, you know, be able to feel pain or be able to feel love or joy to be able to create something that expresses love or joy that resonates with people, you know?
So I think this is very interesting where that can go. Right. I'm trying to think, like what you said, like you don't have to have not been in love to write a love song, but who has not been in love though? You know, I'm just, you know, just pondering that, you know what I'm saying? That's like, you know, so something that's going to be in the back of my brain that I'm thinking, So
think about this, like for instance, the Jackson 5, right?
Yeah.
You know, with Michael Jackson. You know, he wasn't even a teenager when he was singing a lot of these songs. I'm sure at that stage of his life, he probably had never been in love. If it was, mm-hmm. some you know, really puppy love type version mm-hmm. of love. But people still listen to the love songs that mm-hmm. Jackson 5 created way back then because it strikes something in them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, but at that stage of his life, I'm sure he didn't have like an adult version of love, you know?
Yeah.
But not romantic love, you know? So.
Yeah, but you know, but then like, you know, I guess I would question like, okay, so what love are you talking about? Are you talking about like love for, you know what I'm saying, your parent, or, you know, because it's to me, it's all hormones when we break, I guess, when, you know what I'm saying, it's broken down into science anyway. So it doesn't matter, like, you know what I'm saying, the vehicle of love that you use, if it's giving you the same hormonal reaction or whatever, then, you know, I guess right. I don't know. That's just me spitballing. You know what I'm saying? That's
right.
Just
no, I'll be. I'm with you. I'm a brainstorming type guy. I can brainstorm with you all day now.
So how do you think AI will affect entrepreneurship going forward then, or how has it affect entrepreneurship in your experience?
Well, in the creation process. So now they have AI. That's the one big area is the creation process. So now they have, you can do a lot of, you know, video creation, audio creation, a lot of stuff you can do like with AI assistant. You know, maybe to a point where you don't even have to have an assistant. You can tell it, okay, I want this kind of video created, showing my logo at this, you know, mark, at this mark, and at this mark, and I wanted to elicit these kind of emotions and be in this style, and they can create that for you.
Yeah.
Instead of you haven't actually created. I want a background song for this that's upbeat, has a lot of strings in it, and you know, it is chopped up where it hits on the beat of when you cut. And mm-hmm. so it can do that for you. So it can save a lot of time, you know? So instead of having to hire people to do this, or you having to do it yourself, mm-hmm. you can just get AI to do it. I think that's going to be a huge thing with entrepreneurship. It can get AI to do it. And then the actual ideas, maybe you can, of what businesses to start. Mm-hmm. I'm sure like with AI, eventually you can say, okay, because it can pull from all this different data and all these different databases that, you know, no one human can know all this stuff. Yeah. So, okay, what area, what field has the most potential? Basically looking at highest growth rate, biggest area potential for, you know, becoming a millionaire, whatever you want to put in. Mm-hmm. And they list you out, you know, what's the top 10 fields that I should go in? What's the top 10 kind of businesses I can start? And then, you know, what is some business, you know, cross section that businesses have not been started in these fields? So then you can come up with, okay, I'm gonna start this kind of business. You know, mm-hmm. instead of being in this kind of analytics based mm-hmm. on all this data that no one person can have at one time, all these analytics can help you guide you to determine what kind of business to start. Instead of me mm-hmm. just being like, oh, I identify this problem that needs a solution, I'm going to start a business that creates a solution. Now mm-hmm. it can be more analytics based, where it's like, okay, AI told me that there's this issue right here. That's not mm-hmm. being served. I'm going to create a business, whether or not I have a connection to that purpose or not, or to that mm-hmm. problem or not. So I think that a lot of entrepreneurs could take the emotion and take the connection out of it and just start something because you know, AI tells them mm-hmm. that it's an opportunity that they could pursue.
So in dealing with individuals and coming across them, what is their response to, like, you know, AI and, you know, you talking about it and showing that, like, you know, how your app helps mm-hmm. with people? Are they receptive to it? Are they, you know, a little apprehensive about it?
To my app or to the AI?
Well, to the AI, and then also how people have been responding to the app as well.
Okay, yeah, people have been responding to the app really well, really well. So they love the app, they love the connection. And, you know, I think people naturally want to connect with other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's something that's like in our DNA, is this in our, you know, genetically. Mm-hmm. So I think with the app, that's something that really is, that's our core thing, is connection and collaboration. Mm-hmm. That's like our core mission. With AI, as far as in the music industry, it hasn't really touched the music industry, at least on the independent level. Mm-hmm. Independent artists hasn't really touched them enough to be impactful and to negatively impact them enough to mm-hmm. be a constant, you know, conversation piece.
Mm-hmm.
But right now it's more theoretical. Like, we're talking about where we could go. So I have a lot of interesting conversations with artists about how AI could affect them, or how it will affect mm-hmm. them in their future.
Mm-hmm.
But as of right now, it doesn't have that impact. It's not affecting them right now, you know?
Okay. So, you're in the music industry. What trends are you seeing that are happening right now in the music industry?
I say the biggest trend I'm seeing is a lot of independent artists are going to and pursuing sync licensing, getting their music on, video games, getting the music in movies, independent films, getting the music on, TV shows. So that's a huge thing. I think people are seeing that's another revenue stream where I don't have to release it and get it like the traditional way, releasing it and getting it, building up a fan base, have them buy your albums or buy your singles. Another path, and not replace that, but in addition to that is, okay, let me talk to some sync licensing companies and distributors and see if I can get my music placed in a, in a TV show or an independent film. And I'm seeing a lot of that lately, and that's a whole nother area that's our video games, that's a whole nother area that hasn't been pursued as much in the past.
So what keeps you from like diving into like being like an executive or like management and stuff like that? Since, because I know you have the app and it's for about connections with, the artists and the producers, musicians and all that. But based off of your wealth of knowledge, incorporating new tools and technologies into music, what's kept you like, what I'm saying, from diving in it? Or do you dive into that?
What's kept me is like at the core of who I am, I'm an entrepreneur. I want to start my own thing, So I interact with these different people at different music execs and people at different companies and stuff like that. But I want to create my own path. That's always been something that's just in me. I always want to create my own path and create something that is mine. That I can say I created this, and this helped this many people, and it was my brainchild. It came from my head, and I built it. And it's been able to affect the community. It's about being able to, affect people's lives, bring on staff, and create salaries and jobs for people and connections. So that's just something that's just been in me since I was young. My mother was an entrepreneur, so just watching her and her flexibility and her passion for her business. And how she grew that, and how it, changed, and how she had to make pivots along the way. That's something I always wanted for myself, and that was probably the first time I was exposed to it on that level. So I've always wanted that for myself, and it's always just been in me. So I think it's part of his nature, part of his nurture, part of his, it's just something that's in me naturally. But that's not like kind of what you started showing. That's not the only path. That's just my path. I think other people's path would be working for a record label, maybe starting their own record label or being a musician. So there's multiple paths to to fulfillment, multiple paths to affect the community and to people positively. This is just one that resonates with me,
So for aspiring entrepreneurs out there in artists and musicians and looking to dive into the industry, what are like the top two things, pieces of advice that you would give them starting out?
Connections, get honest feedback. So before I started my business, I was living in DC at the time, and I did a lot of events, a lot of independent musician events where I, have this event at a sometimes at a bar, sometimes like a record store where I bring in, I invite a lot of artists from around the city. They'll come in, and we have like an aux, pass the aux situation where people can play the music they're working on. Everybody gives feedback. So I used to host a lot of those. And at those, I said, okay, here's my idea. I'm gonna start at that time before the app, it was the shared workspace. I'm gonna start a shared workspace. Is this something you'll be interested in? So I didn't just dive in without any kind of market research. So I would say, have some kind of market research. You're never gonna like at some point you're gonna have to make the jump. You're never gonna be fully like, oh, I know this is gonna work, because you never know it's gonna work. But you have to at least get some feedback first before you jump in, and also build the connection. So even from throwing, I must have, at that time I started Bass Party Studios, I probably had around 12 of those different events that I hosted. So one of those things, one from throwing those events, one is it gave me feedback. The other thing, it gave me a base to start from. So I had all these different events. So I had hundreds of different musicians that were like, okay, when you started, I'm gonna come through. So I wasn't starting from scratch. When I actually started, I can call all these people or email all these people and say, now it's open. you know, come check it out, you know, so I wasn't starting from scratch. So this connections, personal interaction with people, there's nothing like face-to-face interaction. So try to throw an event or try to be at an event or something like that so you can talk to people in person and get feedback. Just get feedback on your idea, you know, and you get and try to get honest feedback. So people are going to, you know, most times people want don't want to give you bad news. Most people are, you know, pretty good people. Mm-hmm. So set them up to give you honest feedback. So instead of saying, what do you think of this idea? A lot of times they'll be like, yeah, I like the idea. So say, you know, what are some things that, what are some issues that you see happening with this? What mm-hmm. is some the downside of this? So ask them the, not necessarily negative, but ask them on the downsides of stuff. So the, so you're taking the feeling like a jerk away from them because you're asking that question, you know?
Yeah, so, I love that. I love that. That's a jewel right there, a nice size jewel. So if you had the power to change the industry, or, you know what I'm saying, whether it be the music industry or the app game, and like I said, you had the power to complete whatever you want to do, what's one thing that you would change about the industry?
Man, that's a good one. That's a good question. That's a really good question. I think I think one thing is that I see things from both sides, right? So like when it comes to record labels, I see things, they have to have the incentive to even want to sign somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, but on the artist side, it's like, I'm the one that's creating. At some point I have to own all of my, I should be able to own my music, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I see both sides of it. But I think that one thing I would change is that no matter what deal you sign and how much of your ownership of your music you give away, I would say I would have, after a certain amount of time, that ownership, 100% of it goes back to that artist, regardless of the design. So I think at some point, I understand from a business standpoint, from a record label standpoint, you got to make your, you got to be able to recoup. You got to be able to, it has to be worthwhile for you to even front the money for an artist, mm-hmm. you know, and you're taking a lot of the risk. But at some point, they're the ones that create the song. And it could be that, it could be a certain amount of years after you recoup your cost, but there has to be a trigger point for people to be able to own their own, you know, their own music, their own creation.
That's what's up. I like that. And I do think there should be a time limit with that. And it shouldn't be perpetual and, you know, all this other stuff, but you know, hey, I don't have the power to change the industry overnight like that.
Right.
All I could do is educate and let people, you know what I'm saying, make the decisions. So for everybody out there who's going to watch the video and things of that nature, they want to learn more about Bass Parlor and your journey and all that, where do they need to go?
Yeah. Follow me on Instagram at Bass Parlor. That's BassParlour. Download the Bass Parlor app. Make sure you go. It's on the App Store. It's on Google Play. So no matter what kind of phone you have, you know, go to the app, go to your App Store, go to Google Play Store, download the app, Bass Parlour, BassParlour. You can reach out to me directly also, Daryl, Darryl, at BassParlour.com. Those are probably the best ways. You can go to our website, which is BassParlourApp.com. And between those, reach out to me, download the app. Let me know, you know, what you think. Let me know, you know, if there's anything you want to see in the app that's not in the app currently. And we'll just keep building together. Like, my goal is to make sure that I'm connecting the entire world, the world of independent musicians, connecting y'all so we have one strong unit globally. So no matter who you want to reach out to, no matter where they are, you can reach out, you can create and make money off of it.
Yes, what's up? I appreciate that. Thank you, Daryl, for your time. And everybody out there, y'all, make sure you go download this app, especially all my independent musicians and artists out there. Y'all know I'm always advocating for y'all. Here is a resource that you can download where it can make your life easier. Yeah, make sure y'all keep supporting the podcast, platform, channel, all that stuff, Bank That Radio Show. And there, I'd love to have you back on in the future and see, you know what I'm saying, how, much more you've grown.